right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susna.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to listen, to tune in to the Inspire Possibility Show. And as you know, every week I invite various individuals that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who are doing something amazing, who are taking a stand, who are really committed to making a difference in the world. And let me tell you a little bit about the guest today. He wrote a book called Love is a Power. And his name is Robert O. Williams, and he, in the book, leads readers into an intimate journey of his life through the vivid memories of his unique childhood, an inspiring account of his talent and perseverance as a saxophone player, which I am also, his introduction to transcendental meditation, which I happen to also be into, his magical time performing and recording with the Beach Boys, and the extraordinary journey through multiple near-death experiences that I want to hear about, and visits with other dimensions, which culminated in 3 decades of research and invention of quantum code technology, which I'd like to know more about, and the Heart app, which I really want to know about. And it's interesting because his book's called Love is the Power, and there's this phrase that often attributed to Jimi Hendrix, when the power of love is greater than the love of power, then we can have peace in the world. And I have a feeling that Robert is committed to that possibility. So thanks, Robert, for joining me, and I know we're going to have an incredible conversation.
Mark, it's a privilege to be on your show, and thank you for having me. And I love Jimi Hendrix, and that quote is so timely that we remember what he said, and we can talk more about that, what that means.
Yeah. And I know I Googled it before the show started, and they say also Sri Shrimnoy also said a quote like that. And but I think in today's world, it's really, most people think of that from Jimi Hendrix, and back to the, you know, summer love and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes a lot of good intentions kind of somehow get distorted. And sometimes these good intentions, even the best thing, sometimes become into a power play. People lose sight of what the real purpose was for kind of launching this investigation, this way of being in the first place. Yeah. So I'm congratulate you on your book.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I say in the intro or the prologue or something that the book was a collective endeavor for me. And I'm not just being modest. We're in a time where our connectivity, we were just talking before we went on the air about, they used to say 6 degrees of separation, 5 degrees, and now it's down to 2 or 1. We are definitely connected via the internet, and even more basically through our own hearts. And there is scientific research, by the way, that is now proclaiming that reality, that there is a subtle field of energy that is connecting us all. And so I bring that up because, you know, the book is a lot about my life and some of the unusual experiences I've had, but more it is about what's happening with humanity, what's happening right now. And that's where we all come in as a unified collective consciousness. And we wrote that book together. And I don't know if you remember, but And most of the spots where the collective is talking, I put it in italics and kind of indent it because it wasn't my story. It isn't my story as a individual. It is our story as a collective. So thank you for the introduction, and I'm glad to be on your show, Mark.
Well, I'm really honored that you are on the show, and I'm looking forward to delving deeper into your work and also to see what evolves in this conversation. And some of the people that have James Twyman, who I've read a couple of his books, wrote the foreword to your book, and you've had some of the people write about your book. Temple Hayes, who's been a guest of mine, and she wrote a great blurb for my book, The Soul of Uncertainty. And you just have some really great people behind you, and also Will Arnston. I had them also on my show, he and Deidre, and I know that your idea is to. I used to say that when there's, see if I get this right, this is a line from a poem I wrote many, many years ago, is that should there be love, when there's love there can't be fear, and when there's fear, then the prophets of doom will have their day of gloom. So it's this idea that we have to keep loving. There's really no other option if we want to move forward as a society. And I think your book is right in point. How do people get your book?
It is newly released on Amazon. It's available on Amazon. And it's also available on our website called loveisthepower.com.
Mothersofpower.com?
Loveisthepower.com. Loveisthepower.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, what a great URL. I'm amazed that was available.
We got it somehow. We did.
Yeah. And and if people want to talk to you personally, how do they get a hold of you? Can they email you?
Sure they can, yeah. rowilliams@me.com, rowilliams@me.com.
Uh-huh.
And I have a website called robertwilliams108.com, so Robert Williams and the numbers 108.com, and they can get a hold of me through that website as well.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about your background. You got involved in transcendental meditation. And when was that?
When was that? Well, that was in 1976. And I had grown up as a very odd duck and was seeing all kinds of things that most other people didn't see. So I thought I was either crazy or had this kind of inner world that nobody else understood. Mostly I thought I was crazy, so I just didn't think about it. But
wow.
But,
so you were one of those in the crazy club, huh, growing up?
I was in the crazy club. I was in the crazy club. And
I was in that club, too.
So you were in that club, too. I bet you a lot of people
were
there. You know, we're coming out of the closet. Who was
right.
in the club of seeing odd things from time to time, and auras and lights and nature spirits and tree spirits
right.
and little spinning things in the garden. One of the early childhood experiences I had, and I'm leading up to your question about TM, was a particular nature spirit became my friend, if you will, and visited me almost every day. And would show me around and teach me different things. So that's a chapter in the book. But when I was around 11 or 12, right before puberty, 11 or 12, puberty, right? He came to me and said, "I can't see you anymore. I can't see you." And I said, "What? What do you mean? What do you mean?" He just left, and I've never seen him again. And I was kind of thrust into this world of being a young male and all the hormones are changing, and I was longing for that feeling of freedom and joy, which I had as a child prior to that, prior to this nature spirit leaving me. And again, I don't even, you know, I had an argument about a month ago with a psychologist, and he said, you know, there's no way that there's nature spirits, and all of this can be explained via the chemistry in your brain core. And I'll just say, Mark, it doesn't really matter to me. You know, if I imagined all of that, then I have a really
right.
good imagination, and I came out ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not here to shake any belief system about subtle worlds, but I can say that we are in a time of expanding consciousness. So when I was 11 or 12, I was searching for that consciousness of freedom, the consciousness of creative freedom. And I found it in my music, and not every time I played my saxophone, but at certain points, something would kind of just click, and you could even say something played the horn through me. A lot
uh-huh.
of musicians have this experience, right? Where
I know.
You know enough scale, you know enough of the technicalities
right.
of your instrument that you just are witness to something that's happening, particularly in jazz or just improvisational kinds of
right.
music, Indian. So I found that same feeling that I had with this nature spirit, and of course I loved it. So that was one of the reasons I really fell in love with music and my saxophone and practice all the time. Then I was at third year of Cal State Hayward Music Department, and I had had an injury earlier, and I couldn't play my saxophone anymore. So that was a big, big blow. They didn't know why my jaw was starting to lock up and it was in pain all the time. And I went from dentist to dentist and doctor to doctor. And,
mm-hmm.
and finally they said, well, when you were a child, you fell off your bicycle and you broke your temporal mandibular joint, the TMJ.
Wow.
And you were young, and I was 7 years old, so when I grew up, it just didn't grow properly. So now fast forward to my third year of college, playing all the time, my jaw began to not only hurt all the time, but it began to lock. And if you could imagine,
yeah.
I just woke up one morning and I could not open my mouth. And, you know, all
wow.
your, it's like the body is saying, open, and you can't relax it. It's just this horrible feeling, and, you know, it's drooling. But I went to the hospital, and I went to the ER, and they shot me full of something, some tranquilizer, and that was a way to get through the day. But then went to different clinicians, and they said, you know, you just have to give up the saxophone because that's what's happening. The position of your armature, and you know about this, Mark, you have to kind
mm-hmm.
of move your lower jaw forward to play the saxophone in woodwinds.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well,
right.
you know, you can't do that anymore. You have to just, you know, why don't you play guitar? This was the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just play guitar?
Mm-hmm.
That way, you know.
That's what I did. That's what I did.
Well,
I went from the saxophone to the guitar because I was always concerned about... about the armature and my jaw and my teeth and yeah.
You
so did you play? I was reading in your bio. Did you play? Did you perform with the Beach Boys?
Well, here's how the story turned. So, I was very depressed. You talked about TM. So I was going through my dark night of the soul. You know, like Beethoven when his hearing went away. You know, how can you do this to
uh-huh.
me, God? I'm here for my music
uh-huh.
and now I can't even hear. You know, I was shaking my fist at God. I was really, really pissed off. But still, I had, you know, I was a student. I had gigs. So I just stopped practicing, and I was able to get through my gigs and get through my classes because I didn't know what else to do. And one kind of dark, foggy night at Cal State, I had a little rehearsal with a chamber group. And I'll never forget this, just like in the movies where everything's going wrong for this guy, and you know, and it's foggy and it's dark. And so I park and I go to the Cal State Music Department and I rehearse, and then I walk back to my car, and there was a ticket on me. I had parked in a red zone, you know, and I couldn't see the red zone. So here I am, oh my God, everything's going wrong. Everything's bad with my life. So I thought I would just go and pay the ticket, you know, and I went into the campus security. And there was this jovial guy there, one guy, now this is the 70s, different, you know, just the happiest
uh-huh.
Campus patrol officer. And I say this with all affection. He was like the Officer O'Brien type, you know, just that red, happy face, and just laughing. And I'm thinking, why is this guy so happy? I can't, you know, I'm depressed. I just got a ticket. I don't want to hear laughter.
Yeah.
But he was just like, he says, look, it happens to the best of us. He says, let me go over to the file and get your paperwork here, and we'll take care of this ticket. While he was away from his desk, something was drawing me to a photograph on his desk. Now, the photograph was facing, as you can imagine, him sitting in his desk. So it was facing away from me. I'm on the other side of the desk. You know, a lot of people have pictures of their children and wife.
Got it.
So I'm looking at the frame, the back of the frame, and something really just kept saying, take a look at this picture. And I'm thinking, you know, is this like rude? Is this bad to walk around, you know, and look at somebody's picture? And I couldn't resist. Officer O'Brien was away.
It's Maharishi.
Exactly, Mark.
Yeah.
Was Maharishi kind of glowing in this picture. I have to say, you know, I had heard of the Maharishi prior to that. Officer O'Brien comes back, and I said, Is this Maharishi? He says, oh, yeah, I started TM about 6 months ago, and it really helped my stress level. I'm happy all the time. I sleep better. He says, you know, you should check it out. There's an intro lecture this Wednesday. So I checked it out that Wednesday and learned TM that Saturday. So this was in March 1976. And there's that feeling again that I had with the nature spirit, that I had with my music, that it's a freedom. It's a feeling of yourself, but not in a bound condition. And a lot of things on your website talks about that unleashing of creative potential.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
I felt
that, and I started continued my meditation and went to MIU. So my second year of MIU, the Beach Boys,
which for our listeners,
learned,
that's in... Yeah, for our listeners, MIU is the Maharishi University in Fairfield, Iowa, where
you
some
got
people
it. Maharishi International University.
Yeah.
And at that time, it was a fully accredited. I transferred all my credits from Cal State, and they had PhD programs. But the point of this little section of my story, our story, is that the Beach Boys had learned TM with the Beatles, and they wanted to do something to promote TM, and so they came to MIU.
All of the Beach Boys learned.
Not all of them continued, and
right.
Mike Love was the one who stuck with it. So, but at this point, they also wanted to get out of the hustle and bustle of LA and recording there. So they went out there in this beautiful meditating environment, and they started recording an album. When it came time for
in Fairfield,
on the campus, they took one of the buildings.
Was there a studio there or anything, or what?
They built it. They built their own studio just to record this album. You could get it on. You know, it's an MIU album. It's a Beach Boy album. It's not one of their best works. There's no hits on the album, but you'll see my name there. Because when they wanted to add the horns, somebody told Mike Love, who's the lead singer of the Beach Boys, that I was on campus. And I get this little note in my student mailbox, you know, come to this building. And I'm just terrified because I know that's where the Beach Boys are. And we need a sax player. So I had to audition. I had to play the stuff. And I got on the album. And then I didn't have enough money to continue to go to MIU, so I asked Mike Love if I could just tour with the Beach Boys. And make a long story short, I had to go through some people, but I wound up touring with the Beach Boys and playing concerts with them, and then started
as your saxophone player.
As a saxophone player, and then
and how long did
Mike
this,
Love?
How long did this go for?
That was from 1977 through 1979.
Wow!
And in fact, yeah, so I was living at the Mike Love Estate, which was 14 houses right by the ocean in Santa Barbara. Not all the Beach Boys. That was just his thing. You know, each Beach Boy was financially independent at that point. And Mike was starting a production company. So I began to not only play and tour. They weren't touring a lot, but play with the Beach Boys. but he started a production company focused on soundtracks for motion picture, and so I would play sax and also began doing business with Michael of selling music to motion picture companies. So that was, let me stop there. So that was my life up to 1979.
Right. So let's do this. I'm, you know, let's look at how much time we have left, and we have about a little over 10 minutes, and I kind of want to get into talking about, you talked about the quantum code technology and what that is and how you devoted your life to this research. Tell me about and then I know you had some multiple near-death experiences. Could you maybe briefly talk about that and lead into the invention of the quantum code technology? Because I want to save some time to hear about the HART app. I'd love to have one myself.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me, because I space out, and you know, so 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's focus.
So I'm going to interrupt you if I kind of feel, you know, because I definitely want to know about the HART app.
Please do that. But I can start right where I left off, actually, because it was in Santa Barbara that I had the near-death experience, and we can come back to that. When I was out of body and was coming back into my body, I saw there was a domain or a dimension where I saw a bunch of symbols and geometries and mandalas. So I'm back in my body, my heart starts beating, my breath starts going, and I wrote down as many of those symbols as I could remember. Now, for the next 12 years, I was in high research mode. What were the meaning of the symbols? And I found them, most of them, in all indigenous art. It goes back to Paleolithic times. There's these geometric symbols that were on cave drawings, and then in pre-modern history, in the Sanskrit, the mandalas, and in Cherokee Indians, these things show up. So now, just to get to your point, because I know time is limited, there are 108. There are 108 mandalas or codes that signify consciousness moving from one state to another. And in this specific instance, it's about changing a state of consciousness where what Jimi Hendrix alluded to, where the love of power changes to the power of love. I mean, that's not what the Vedas say, but almost. And just like a plant going from the seed all the way to the flower, there's all these phases of evolution. And at each phase, there's a blueprint. There's a subtle energetic blueprint so that rose knows how to gather itself within the chaos and bust away from that bud and show itself as a new expression of the seed. And that has been talked about by these ancient seers, these ancient rishis, and all the religions. I found them in all the religions. So this app, I'm getting to that. So there's 108 codes, we call them codes, that have to do with this next highest level of consciousness for humanity. And I was able to, with the help of really smart people, Bill Tiller at Stanford University, chairman of the Department of Material Sciences, he talked about crystallography and the information that crystals hold. So he helped me, and I had some other people that became part of this project. So again, cutting the long story short, what we've been able to do is have those same information fields, those same mandalas, those same frequencies of information broadcast through the airwaves to be picked up by any cell phone via an app. And we wanted to make sure this was the real thing, and we had all kinds of tests, particularly Dr. Beverly Rubik at the University of California, who's a biophysicist, did a 2-year study showing that the app versus the placebo app, or that looked just the same on your cell phone, but it wasn't the real thing. She went through a really rigorous study and found that with the app turned on, which is just these natural frequencies, these natural codes of information that are alive and active right now because we're at this blossoming stage of consciousness. she wanted to make sure that it was a good thing, and we did too. So it turns out that she measured the human heart, the physical heart, with our app on and the app not on, and found that heart rate variability increased by over 30%, which is pretty much unheard of, and it sustained that level, which means another way to say that is that the stress level decreased by 30%. So when stress decreases, you become more aware, you become less fearful. Doesn't mean we walk in front of a bus or are unable to. It doesn't mean we're numbed out, you know. It means we're actually more alive,
right,
and more aware. So that's what this app is. It's called the Heart Plus with the plus sign. So if you go to Apple Store or Google, you just search for H-E-R-T plus sign, and then you'll see it. And you can download it. It's a $1.95 one-time fee. And one of the reasons that was behind this is that you become part of a community, because we want to raise consciousness. And there's a theory that if you get a small percentage of people in a community sharing or just realizing that they're part of a community and functioning just a little bit more from their heart chakras, that it's going to have an effect on the entire population. So that's kind of our experiment. And if you sign up for the app, you pay your $1.95 one-time fee and you turn it on, you'll feel this natural, it's like a walk in nature. It's all really good vibes. Then you're part of you'll start to see who's in what city, how many people have the app turned on, and how many people in China have, you know, so it's kind of a cool experiment we're also doing via this app. Yeah, via this
app.
I like it.
So, people just go to the Apple Store and get it that way? I mean, do they have to have like an Apple device to get it, or?
Nope. Any cell phone, what's the old kind of cell phone? I guess smartphone. If you have to be able to download
any
an app, like a game.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure. Any tablet or
yes.
An Android would work too, or any tablet.
Yeah, no, I know we're live.
Any smartphone or tablet.
Any smartphone or tablet.
Where would they download? Can they get to the Apple Store on an Android phone? That's my question.
Absolutely, you can. You can get to Google
as well.
It's available on Google, too, the Google App Store.
Good. Yeah. And how long has it been out?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because I know we're live. And we had it up for about a week, and then there was a little bug, not in the frequencies, but there was a little thing that didn't work right, so we pulled it down. It's not on today, Mark, but we're anticipating within the next 2 or 3 days it'll be up and available again. So what is today?
Will you let me know?
I'd say by Friday. Okay, I will let you know.
Yeah, will you let me know when it's up? Because I want to get one.
Absolutely, I will. You bet.
Wow, yeah. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, and I know that there are a lot of things that, you know, we didn't get into, but I have a feeling that that would take many hours, not just
a half hour.
But I think we covered a lot.
We did. Thanks for interrupting me, because I tend to go on and on. I'm glad I didn't hang out too long on my childhood. You know, because it's about now. It's about this time of Earth. It's about this extraordinary, you know, on your website, if I have time to say, I was reading everything on your website, and you have a quote. It says, "And the day came when the pain to remain closed in a bud became more painful than the risk to blossom." You know, I that's what happened to me, but also it's going to be easier to blossom because of this community, because of the season that we're in. Flowers blossom much more easily in springtime than they do winter, you know? So we are in this new category of experience, this new phase of life. And so it is about now.
I kind of think of it in the same way, and the way I say it is that I feel like we're all doing these things, we're putting ourselves out there, and sometimes we wonder, are we really connecting with people, and what are we doing? At least I do. And what I feel now is that the metaphor I use is that we're all gathering our tribe of kindred souls.
There you go.
By putting ourselves out there, sharing who we are, and people are going to be attracted to us. They're going to come to us rather than always having to look to try to get somebody to like us. But by our being our real you, our authentic self, we're going to attract, we're going to create a vibration that's going to attract a lot of people coming into our space. And how that happens, I'm not exactly sure, but I know it does happen. And this idea magic happening, and we talked about 6 degrees of separation. Like I said, I think it's down to one right now because of the way everything is speeding up, and we just keep constantly meeting people that are total alignment with us.
Yeah, and there's a resonance there. There's the subtle energetic component of our lives, not chemical.
So,
with all due respect to that psychologist, this is much more than chemistry. And you could tell any mother who's had the intuition that their child, that her child is in danger, how many times you heard that. And it's not because, some chemistry, it is, we are in tune with each other. Mothers are in tune with their children always. And we are in tune with our kindred spirits, as you said, and eventually there'll be a massive shift, and we'll wonder how that's going to look, but it's going to be better. We know it's going to be better than suffering and cruelty and these things that are still happening.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we have to sign off now, Robert, and for a thank you for being my guest on the Aspire Possibility Show. I want to send you a copy of my book, The Soul of Uncertainty. And
thank you, Mark.
Yes, and to remind our listeners that each week we have an amazing, fascinating guest that can enlighten us, empower us, and entertain us all at the same time. And until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com. And click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.